Why shipping by sea is so weirdly cheap these days, you can send 3 packed metal cargo containers across the ocean for less than the cost of buying a single iPhone. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. This Sunday, the superhighway of global commerce, the Panama Canal, widened for much bigger ships, opens for business. I was just down there checking it out.
Grande, push back, easy, 45.
A massive freighter with a cargo of neatly stacked wind generator blades noses into the original canal opened in 1914. To port is the new sliding locks of Panama Canal version 2016. The tugboat I'm riding gives the cargo ship, AAL's Kobe, a good shove in the rear.
You know, this is a contact sport.
A contact sport indeed. The opening of the canal is a moment of crowning glory for Panama, but not a moment of crowning glory for globalization. You see, they're opening up this baby at a time that world trade has come off the boil, which is the theme of our coverage this week. Today, what is with the cargo shipping business? I'm inside a 40-foot shipping container. It was an American trucking-turned-shipping tycoon who invented these standardized metal boxes 60 years ago. Easy on, easy off between trucks, ships, and rail cars. To U.S. workers who saw their factories go overseas, these containers are weapons of mass job destruction. But to many economists, these shipping containers reduce the friction of global trade so that countries could stick to doing and making what they're especially good at, thereby fueling economic growth. Too bad the companies that ship cargo are not seeing that growth these days.
Container shipping has proven to be a very, very treacherous business.
Mark Levinson is an economist, historian, and author of The Box, How the Shipping Container Made the World Smaller and the World Economy Bigger.
The ship lines have to make very expensive investments, and they have to plan them pretty far in advance. And the world economy at the time these ships are actually built and ready for service may be quite different from what they thought it was going to be when their vessels were ordered.
That happened. These are tough times for shipping companies, with the names you see on the containers after they're lifted from the ships and clamped onto the backs of trucks. Maersk, Hapag-Lloyd, and others ordered lots of newer and bigger ships.
In the first half century after World War II, international trade grew at about 7% a year. It was really a booming business. And more recently, we've seen trade growing at about the growth rate of the world economy. All of these vessels that had been ordered based on the expectation that trade was going to boom are providing excess capacity right now. And that's made for hard times for many of the ship lines.
The rate collapse is the best word for it, has been absolutely catastrophic.
Tim Power, managing director of Drewry Shipping Consultants in London, sees two pressures colliding so that shippers can't charge what they once could: weaker trade and bigger ships.
We are getting an increased overtonnaging of vessels that is having a downward effect on pricing. This is made much worse by the fact that a lot of these ships now are the very big ones, and the lines are thinking, how are we going to deploy them? And they are fighting for market share in order to keep the volume so that they can fill them.
The new Panama Canal can take ships loaded with about 14,000 of these boxes, compared to up to 5,000 per ship in the old canal. That actually adds capacity at a time when there's already this glut. Couple that to the general problem for shippers: trade around the world has turned listless.
Trade growth is slowing down, and it's not growing as fast as GDP anymore.
Aditya Matu, research manager of trade and international integration at the World Bank. China's favoring of its consumers over exports is part of this. Europe's economy, juddering along on missing cylinders, is not helping. Many of the countries that could integrate into the world trading system have already done so, leading some experts to use the term peak trade.
I would hesitate to say peak trade. Let's say a temporary plateau trade seems to be a more appropriate term, because I think there is huge scope for further growth in trade if we draw in more products, not just goods, but services, and not just the usual participants in these global value chains, which are the United States, parts of Europe and Southeast Asia, but draw in Africa, South Asia, South America.
But what if the new canal is opening not into a temporary plateau for trade, but at the end of an era? What if globalization is no longer an impressive growth stock, but has become like a utility stock, a steady earner without much of an upside? Tomorrow we'll talk to a Nobel laureate as our series, The Last Ditch Effort, The New Panama Canal and the End of Globalization, continues. No fans of Obamacare. Now congressional Republicans have offered what Speaker Paul Ryan is calling a better way. Here's Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson on the health care piece.
Many details are still to come, but this proposal aspires to give Americans more choice. Individuals could choose a plan and take it with them from job to job. Americans would get a refundable tax credit and payment at the beginning of each month to buy insurance on the individual market. While the amount would vary by age, the plan hasn't said yet how much it would be. The proposal also pushes the use of health savings accounts, which set aside pre-tax money to use to cover health care expenses. Down the road, it would raise the age for Medicare eligibility and allow Medicare recipients the option of getting a subsidy to buy private insurance on a new Medicare exchange.
And a correction, last week we did an interview about public companies not hiring full-timers, which got the number wrong on Amazon's use of temporary workers. On average, throughout the year, nearly 90% of workers in Amazon's distribution centers are regular full-time employees. Last year, Amazon increased its full-time employees in distribution centers to 90,000 from 50,000. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.